WMPG, Gorham, Portland. Hi, Golden Age film fanatics, and welcome to DVD Classics Corner on the Air. My name is Dick Dinman, and our goal is to become your exclusive guide to the very best of the Golden Age classics coming out on DVD. We'll have reviews, breaking news of upcoming releases, plenty of surprise guests, and a special feature devoted to the great Golden Age film composers, which we call Cine Music. So let's turn on the marquee and lights, camera, action. Way back in 1964, an expensive Sam Peckinpah would-be blockbuster called Major Dundee opened to absolutely withering reviews that focused on its jagged editing and forlorn musical score, and shortly thereafter disappeared without a trace. Well, more than four decades later, Columbia unearthed 12 never-before-seen minutes of this film and made a really bold decision to entirely rescore it. And this new restored version arrives at your local video store very soon. And our show today is going to pay tribute to the spanking new version of Major Dundee with our guests, star Michael Anderson Jr., Christopher Caliendo, who composed the new score, and a gentleman named Glenn Erickson, who knows more about this film than anyone I know. Our guest, Michael Anderson Jr., is one of the top-billed stars of Major Dundee, and this delightful and talented actor has some very insightful and fascinating stories to tell about its extremely troubled production. Michael Anderson Jr., welcome to our show.
My pleasure.
It's great to have you here. And you know, we're going to spend a lot of time talking about this Columbia restoration after all of these years of Major Dundee. Now, you and I saw the new restored Major Dundee just a very short time ago.
Yeah.
What were your feelings about it? Now, when is the last time you saw the film?
The last time I saw the film in its entirety was probably 40 years ago.
And guess what? Then it wasn't in its entirety.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And I can say this version is the classic that it was always supposed to be.
Yes.
I mean, I was so disappointed. I had been working so I didn't hear anything about Major Dundee because I was doing Glory Guys and then Sons of Katie Elder. And then when I came back to L.A., it was playing at my local theater. So I took a couple of friends and we sat there and bought popcorn and we watched the movie. And within 10 seconds, I knew that this was something that had gone terribly wrong. First of all, the music.
Yes.
Daniel Ampitiatrov had done what I consider to be, and I don't know him, I'm sure he's quite brilliant, but I think it is, without question, the worst movie score I had ever heard.
It is, but I have to interrupt you on that basis. I spoke to the new composer a few days ago, and he verified what I always thought. Now, Daniel Ampitiatrov had done scores for many, many films, which were very, very fine.
Yeah.
Here, we have a man, a producer named Jerry Bressler.
Yes.
And possibly the worst music department in the history of studios at Columbia at that time.
Right.
And Daniel
Ampitiatrov.
He had nothing to do with that awful Mitch Miller music. That instantly threw the picture into the waste bin.
Well, it was really tragic because you sit there and that and the fact that it didn't look like Panavision. It was shot in Panavision. It was all squeezed up and it was the whole movie choppy and the whole thing just fell
terrible. I have to tell our audience the first thing you see in Major Dundee are the remainders of a massacre. It's a very, very serious and disorienting scene. Then the credits come on, and you hear this very jaunty Mitch Miller.
I know. It's jarring.
It's completely jarring.
So that was very distressing. So I was very disappointed in the film, and I could see why it hadn't done well. When I watched the DVD version, I was absolutely blown away.
Yes.
That they could restore a movie. First of all, the music, the new music, is sensational. I think this man is a genius.
I agree with you.
And I would not, if I were directing or producing, I would hire this guy in a shot.
Yes.
He did a brilliant job. It makes the movie.
And he told me he only had a month to do it.
Wow, that's incredible. And the look of the film is it's classic. It's
yes.
become a classic. And where I was once sort of not embarrassed to be in it, because I always thought the performances were good, I always thought the direction was absolutely wonderful,
yeah.
and that the story is fabulous, and the cinematography. But it didn't live up to its expectations. And now I can honestly say I'm very, very proud to have been in that movie.
Well, I don't blame you. It's a very powerful movie, and the acting is superb. Heston is, I think he's very, very, very fine.
I think it's absolutely one of his best performances.
So do I. There's more, I mean, some people accuse him of posing and this and that. Maybe, but whatever he does, very few others could do. He's unique in his ability to show sensitivity and power at the same time.
Well, and the part called for it.
Yes.
So it was a big canvas.
Yes, it was.
And also, the supporting cast was absolutely amazing to be working with people like Warren Oates, who, funnily enough, I had worked with before.
Yes.
And I'd worked with Chuck before, and I hadn't worked with Richard Harris, but I knew him well. So I had spent a lot of time around Richard.
Yes.
And knew all the story. And what a drama queen he was. Oh, my God. The first read-through for Major Dundee was an extraordinary experience. Here we'd all been cast, and Richard was off in Italy working with Antonioni doing something.
Yeah.
We're all sitting around the table at 3 o'clock in the afternoon at this little office at Columbia Studios, and word kept, all the pencils were sharpened, and James Coburn was there, Jim Hutton, me, and Chuck Heston, of course, Sam Peckinpah, and Jerry Bressler, and everybody, waiting for Richard Harris to arrive from the airport. He finally did arrive about 20 minutes late, and hellos all around. He sat down, looking like hell, I must tell you. He looked to me like he was incredibly hungover. And everybody started the reading. Well, you know, he doesn't come in till page 12 or something.
Yeah.
And so the reading went perfectly. Nobody flubbed the line. Everybody read what was on the page. And finally it came to Harris's turn to speak. And he said, well, Major Dundee, and he stood up and he said, now, this line here, would I be saying, I mean, do you think that, would I, oh, my God. And he started to grab for the table and lean forward, and everybody looked up and looked at him, and my first thought was, oh, no, we're not going to stop on every line. Richard, get a hold of yourself. And he said, I'll be all right, I'll be all right. And he said, now, this line, I mean, my relationship with, oh, my God, oh, my God. And everybody looked at him, and the next thing we knew, and this is absolutely serious, I'm standing over him as he's being wheeled into an ambulance and taken to the hospital. And he told me later, when we were in Mexico, and he says, and you dumb whatever, he said, the last thing I remember is you standing over me going, and shaking your head. He says, you didn't believe I was having a heart attack. I said, no, he's not.
It wasn't a heart attack, though, was it?
That was what they were afraid of. He was exhausted. He was hungover.
That's what...
Hello.
That's...
Well, and then, of course, we all had to learn how to ride. Well, luckily, because of my experience on the Sundowners, I knew how to ride.
Yeah.
And watching Richard trying to ride was worth the price of admission. I have to tell you, I'd look over and I'd see this body bobbing up and down saying, oh, Christ, oh, my God, oh, I can't do this. What the hell am I doing? And I think if you look in the movie, you can see parts where he's a bit loose on that horse. Bless his heart. I loved him very, very much. He was, what a character.
Yes, he certainly was.
They're going to give us a party, Captain.
Sure looks like it.
You thieves, renegades, deserters, you gentlemen of the South, I want some volunteers. I want volunteers to fight the Apache Sierra Chiriba. I need horse soldiers. Men who can ride, men who can shoot. Return, I promise you nothing. Saddle sores, short rations, maybe a bullet in your belly. And free air to breathe, fair share of tobacco, quarter pay. My goodwill, best offices for pardons and paroles when we get back. I don't know what that might be worth to you. But I do know if any man signs on with me and then attempts to desert, I will shoot him out of hand. From you, I'll accept one man with some experience of command as an acting lieutenant. Captain Tyreen, does the prospect of serving under your country's flag once again seem more attractive than dragging its chains in this prison?
It is not my country, Major Dundee. I damn its flag and I damn you. And I would rather hang than serve.
Now, speaking of characters, the gentleman who directed Major Dundee...
Yes?
...is a man, a mild-mannered man, named Sam Peckinpah.
Yes.
And I have heard so many stories. We had Sally Struthers a few weeks ago on the show, and she told us some incredible stories.
Oh.
And I've heard so many great stories. What can you tell us about...
Well, the day I got Major Dundee the part, I had to go read at 3 o'clock in the afternoon for him, or meet him, at Columbia. Well, it turned out to be November 22nd, 1963. That was the day that President Kennedy was assassinated.
Oh.
So I called my agent and I said, well, surely that this whole thing's been canceled. You know, and he said, no, they want you to go in. So I went in and Jerry Breslow was there and five or six people and Sam, and we were all introduced, and I said, look, I just can't read. I'm devastated. And Sam was very charming. He said, you don't have to read. You've got the part. I just wanted to see you. And he said, you're perfect. And that was basically it. I then went home. Then we started writing lessons and all that stuff, and we finally ended up going down to Mexico. I didn't have much to do with Sam as far as direction's concerned. Sam didn't direct. He never would say, punch it up, or this needs to be, or just remember that you've just come from this little village, and so on and so forth. He didn't direct. He just set the scene in such a way that everybody knew exactly what we were doing. It was, as, by the way, did Fred Zinnemann. Fred Zinnemann didn't direct either. George Stevens would. But I liked that about Sam, but it was a bit unnerving because I was one of those guys who liked somebody to say, you know, you need to be a little stronger here, or, I just wanted to make sure that we were all on the same page.
Yes.
But as I look back at the film, I realize what a sure hand he had for working with his talent. It's absolutely classic, his work.
So all in all, it was a positive experience.
Oh, it was a wonderful experience.
Now, the famous story about the picture supposedly closing down and Jerry Breslow of Columbia saying, that's it, we're going to fire Sam.
Well, by the way, we heard that 2 weeks into production.
That soon?
Oh, yeah. Within 3 weeks, we were, what was it? Within 3 weeks, we were 3 weeks behind.
Huh.
Which didn't surprise me because, you know, greatest story ever told, for instance.
Oh, yeah.
One week into production, we were a year behind.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, it was standard fare. But apparently it was of great concern to the powers that be. And there was early talk about Chuck being a prince of a man and standing up for Sam and saying that you can't fire Sam, I'll walk. And then they tried to work something else out. And then that wonderful story about him offering to put up his salary to pay for the completion of the film.
Which
he didn't think they would ever take him up on.
He said, yeah, the agent said, are you nuts, Chuck? They'll go for it instantly. And Heston said, come on now.
Yeah, they wouldn't be that petty.
They would not do that. Just tell them and let's get on with it. And sure enough, the following morning, the agent calls Chuck and says, I'd just like you to know that you're doing this film for nothing. And worse, so am I.
absolutely. Well, I think it was a good thing. History is the final judge. And I think history will judge everybody on that film, except Columbia, perhaps, very, very fairly.
Well, ultimately, Columbia is Sony Columbia are responsible for this spectacular restoration.
Which is spectacular.
It is spectacular, and it looks and sounds just great, and the new score
is brilliant.
Is brilliant.
Absolutely brilliant.
I'm looking forward to having the composer on our show very shortly
as
part of a tribute to it. But I don't think we can do much better than talking to you. You've been just the most wonderful guest, Michael.
Thank you.
I've enjoyed this so much.
Well, my pleasure, Dick. Anytime.
Oh, listen, we'll take you up on that.
We'll do this again.
I'll look forward to it.
You're listening to WMPG 90.9 on your dial, FM, Portland.
When you hear the new score to Major Dundee, you'll instantly understand why Sony Columbia chose Christopher Caliendo to rescore their restored version. It's a fantastic job, and he's a wonderful man, and we're delighted to have him on our show on this rather amazing event. A major movie, Major Dundee, no less, completely remastered and restored with an entirely new score. Now, as far as I can see, this is the very first time this has ever happened. The film was originally released with one of the worst scores ever put together. Put together is about the right term, I think, Christopher. When was the very first time you heard about the possibility of a new score being attached to an older film?
November 29th, I remember it very clearly. I actually was scoring another picture at the time, and my dear friend Grover Crisp at Sony, who heads film restoration, called me, and that was the initial time. Following through with that, I think it wasn't until December 5th when I was given three cassettes with the original music on the film, and I had to sit and watch it. I think I had just one. The only time I was allotted was just an initial 2.5 hours to watch that film once, because I was scoring another picture. And these are the types of intimations that make this kind of storytelling fascinating, because there's a lot of truisms that come through Hollywood in terms of the brevity of time allotted the composer to score a picture.
What was your initial reaction?
It just seemed an extremely long-winded picture. It seemed to get very messy around Reel 5. It was a film with tremendous conflicts. I thought the music was not appropriate for the picture, and possibly could have been the reason why it seemed, in my opinion, temporally very, very slow and incomplete in many ways. Mm. But you have to understand, it's very difficult. This is the first time in my life, maybe ever, where I'll look at a picture which already has music on it.
Yes.
And my job is to look at a picture and immediately hear music, which is very difficult to do when you're listening to something that already has music on it. So that in mind, my original opinion was a disillusionment. Can I do this? Do I have the time to do this? How much music is required? Because if you do remember, the original score is wall to wall.
It's
108 minutes of music in the original score.
Yes.
You know, here's a chance where in reviewing the blank cassettes, that was really an epiphany for me. I was very nervous. I was quite concerned when looking at the film with the previous music, because it gives off a completely different impression. Then the slate's wiped clean, and as soon as Chariba says to the soldier hung upside down over that fire pit, who are you going to send after me now, against me now, and the title Major Dundee comes full into screen, that was it. Yes. That was the explosion. And I heard the opening G octave, ba-dum, ba-dum.
Pony soldier, I am Sierra Chariba. Who you send against me now?
Somehow, magically, with the ineffable quality that music affords us, that the heart of the conflict had to be there in the opening credits over the massacre scene. Real quickly in that opening, it would never have occurred to me while listening to the film with the previous music on, but I knew I was off and running as soon as I heard that. And there on in, there was no stopping. 29 days later, the score was recorded at Capitol Studios here in Hollywood with 34 of the top best musicians in the union here in Los Angeles. And I was a very, very happy man and a very tired man when Grover looked at me and he put his hand over his heart and said, "Trust me, I'm very, very happy."
Oh, and anyone, and I'm saying this to my audience, the wonderful thing about this new DVD of Major Dundee is that it contains on one side the original score and on the other side the new, vastly superior Christopher Caliendo score. In any event, the entire score to me is a revelation. Mm. And what it does for the film is sensational. Now, how much time did they give you?
I was given 29 days.
Oh,
to write 80 minutes of music.
That is absolutely extraordinary. And I might tell our audience, you'd never know it when you see this film with this vibrant new score. Christopher, it's very, very fine work. Looking at the results, I just can't imagine anyone doing a better job.
The composer is the last lead actor in a film. But you look at the greats and the classics, those composers who knew what they were doing knew when to turn it on and absolutely knew when to turn it off and absolutely knew when not to write anything at all.
That's correct.
Very important.
That's very important. And clearly Daniel Amfitheatrov had zero power when he originally scored Major Dundee. It was literally taken over by the producer.
I'm like you, a Golden Age enthusiast. I live on the shoulders of these giants, and I've always tried to maintain a barometer of excellence in treating film music as art, as a form of art making. I have always been able, truly, to write what I want to write and get my point across and never settle for second-rate writing. I just won't do it.
Yes.
And all along comes Major Dundee. I may never, ever get an opportunity again where this is this classic situation. Grover Crisp hands me the score, says, "Disappear, I don't want to know. Write what you write, I trust you."
Oh.
That does not happen anymore today.
Oh.
But everyone's living in fear. The director has a 10-track. He selects music or she selects music that she thinks would be appropriate, which is important. It's a vital part of getting the dailies over to the producers and the directors, the investors, to have an idea what the music sounds like or the film sounds like. And the director all of a sudden gets very comfortable with that music and says, "Mimic this," to the composer. Now, the composer, if it's a really good composer, now I have to copyright music like someone else.
If you go through a list of composers whose completed work for a film was junked for some supposedly more popular or inferior score. There's a recent example of a big blockbuster film where the composer was fired and another composer had 2 weeks to do the score. The score ended up is just horrific. And there is not a composer that you can name, including, by the way, someone who we both knew, Henry Mancini.
Oh, yeah.
Did you know that I spent some very nice evenings with Henry Mancini and I thought he was a lovely man. But he told me the story of what happened on a movie called Torn Curtain. Now, Torn Curtain was a Hitchcock movie. Bernard Herrmann did the score. I have the score. It was a very intense, good Herrmann score. Hitchcock didn't like it, fired him, hired Henry Mancini, who did his score, and Hitchcock said, "It sounds too much like Herrmann, you're fired." I would assume that if you were asked to rescore Citizen Kane, you would turn it down.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Within a second. I wouldn't think twice.
Right. Christopher, I am so grateful for your being on this show. You've been a wonderful guest. I hope you continue with many, many more film scores. And as you do, I hope you'll return to our show.
Well, Dick, I have to thank you, too, because it's people like yourself, the few that are left, that augment, have an understanding of the value of music, you allow me to deliberate and share it with more people and make new friends, and I can't thank you enough. Also, my mother and father thank you. This is, you can tell your people that it's taken me 19 years in Hollywood to get my first big break.
Oh.
Just to let you know.
Yes. Well, again, my congratulations on a job brilliantly done. And
thank you.
I just can't wait to have you back on the show. Thank you so much, Christopher.
My pleasure. Big hug to you.
Thanks again. It's really great to finally have my friend Glenn Erickson on the show with me. Now, Glenn writes the reviews, and I might add brilliantly, on one of my favorite DVD review websites, DVDSavant.com. I promise you, Glenn is probably the most Dundee literate gentleman I know. When did you first become interested in the film?
Well, a professor called Jim Kitzes had a Peckinpah class at UCLA about 1973, and he showed the worst-looking 16mm print of it you can imagine, and I was already a big Wild Bunch fan,
Yeah. And
it was just one of these things I had to investigate.
And what was your first impression, despite the condition of the print?
I frankly didn't understand the movie. The plot was very hard to follow.
Yeah.
Everyone laughed at the music. It was, you know, pretty silly.
Yeah.
And there were so many gaps in continuity in the story that I honestly didn't follow it very well.
Yes.
I don't really have very strong memories of seeing it the first time.
Well, that essentially was the problem. And, of course, the film did no business at all and disappeared into obscurity. And for years and years, and this is one film that I had not seen originally because the word of mouth was so disastrous on it that I elected not to go see it. And then I would come across some awful-looking pan and scan print of it on the Western Channel and just never be able to get through it. This new DVD, as far I have to say, the quality of the image and the quality of the sound, in many, many respects, a different film. Now, I know you've seen it on the big screen, the restored version on the big screen. Do you feel, as I do, that it was a considerable improvement?
Yes, very much. The quality is so improved that there's really no comparison. I think the addition of the 12 minutes plugs three or four plot holes that were the worst and gives you a proper introduction to the setting of the movie.
Glenn, as you know, I have a site called www.dvdclassicscorner.net, but my very favorite site is a site called dvdsavant.com. which is yours, because the reviews are wonderful.
I am very obviously very proud of my reviews. And
you should
everyone
be.
Will have to take all of my reviews of Major Dundee with a grain of salt, because I'm just so crazy about the picture. I don't think I'm very objective at all.
Well, that's our show for today. DVD Classics Corner on the Air is conceived, written, produced, and directed by me, Double D. Now I think I'll take a casual stroll to my website, www.dvdclassicscorner.net, and read some of those great reviews. And if you twist my arm, I may even write a few. So until next week on WMPG, keep happy, keep healthy, and keep listening.